Welcome to Feldman
Blog
World
Talk
Review.
Radio.
It's your world, I just live in it.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Hey, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Feldman World Review. This is Brian Irving, your host here at Feldman World Review. Thanking you for tuning in, and I appreciate the support. And don't forget, to all you people, you can save the link. The podcast is out there on Blog Talk Radio. You can get to the link anytime. You can listen to the show anytime, anywhere, in your car, taking a shower. You know, whatever you feel like doing, you can have the show on. But I really appreciate it, and thanks a lot. You know, it's amazing. It's amazing what's been going on. since the end of February, early March. You know, with COVID into the, the George Floyd fiasco with that stupid cop. But, you know, it's been incredible. But, you know, it is July the 12th. And I don't know about you guys, but it's hot as heck down here. I'm broadcasting from Florida, and it is hot. I mean, it has been hot. But it reminded me, you know, I'm from New Jersey. And, you know, today, July 12th, marked the beginning of the 1967 Newark riots. The Newark riots was one of 159 race riots that swept cities in the United States during the long, hot summer of 67. The riot occurred in Newark, New Jersey between July 12th and July 17th, 1967. Over the 4 days of rioting, looting, and property destruction, 26 people died, hundreds were injured. Now, in the decades leading up to these riots, the deindustrialization and suburbanization were major contributors to changes in Newark's demographics. The economics always change the demographics, don't they? You know, especially when there's a lot of socialist rigging going on. Now, white middle-class residents left for other towns across New Jersey, and one of the largest examples of white flight in the country. Now, due to the legislation of the Servicemen's Readjustment Act of 1944, white veterans who had just returned from fighting in World War II began to emigrate from Newark to the suburbs, where there was improved access to interstate highways, low-interest mortgages, and colleges. The outflow suburban sprawl of white veterans from Newark was rapidly replaced with an influx of black people moving into the Central Ward. The black people, however, faced discrimination in jobs and housing, and ultimately making their lives more likely to fail into that cycle of poverty. And you'll never guess what party was running Newark back then. And Newark was one of the United States' first majority black cities, but was still controlled by white politicians. And I want to tell you that since I've been there, I lived there all through the 60s, 70s, 80s, while moving around. But, you know, it's not the race of the politician that matters. It's the economic and social and cultural philosophy of that politician. Because Newark has suffered under all the leadership, you know, all leadership, and still suffers today, which is an example of what we see all across the country in these Democrat-controlled cities and counties. You know, in New Jersey, when I was going to vote in New Jersey, and especially the local and county elections, there's only one party. I mean, that's the Democrats' goal, is to wipe the other party out, either with gerrymandering or changing county sizes and trying to balance the electorate so they can win, because they want a bulletproof control forever. You know, that's what they thought they were going to get with Hillary Clinton, and that's what Biden thinks he's going to get them back on track to be. You know, the only choice, right, the Democrats. So what we're seeing today is no surprise in Minneapolis, in Seattle, in Los Angeles, in New York, you know, in Baton Rouge, in Miami, in the different places where you're seeing the riots going on and the fighting going on. Okay, because their policies never address the issues in the inner city. They never address the issues in America for any group, not just African Americans, but any group, Latinos, Asians. I'm so sick of the, you know, breaking everybody up into these racial groups, because there are people of different races that have the same beliefs. Many religions have many different races that believe in those religions, whether it's, you know, there's Ethiopian Jews, okay? There's American Muslims. There are Asian Catholics. You know, the world is that way. And to break this thing down all the time by these racial lines is just insane. And it's an old game. It's an old game, and the Democrats, it's a game the Democrats have played since the founding of the country. You know, since the Democrats fought so feverishly to maintain slavery in America. They were the party of Jim Crow. They're the party of the Ku Klux Klan. They're the party of the hangings, the lynchings, the burnings, voter intimidation, voter suppression. You know, the Klan would stand out in front of the voting booth and try to intimidate the African Americans who at the time were overwhelmingly Republican. They didn't want them to vote Republican in the South. They wanted Democrat control. The Democrats had that control for a long time, for a long time. And I say it all the time, but Woodrow Wilson, FDR, and Lyndon Baines Johnson were all segregationists, you know, as well as Al Gore's father. You know, they are the ones. And they're the ones that have created this madness, this mess that we're in the middle of now. They created this mess across the country. And how did they create it? One, they've been pouring millions or billions of dollars over time into only Black Lives Matter. Okay, they allowed Antifa for the last 5, 6, 7 years, and especially when Antifa was going and beating up Trump supporters and rioting, and you know, Milo goes to speak at Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley, and they almost burned the place down. I mean, they've allowed this to happen, and they support it. You know, and, you know, George Floyd, it was a tragedy. It was a tragedy carried out by a lowlife cop, not representative of the 99% of the police department. And he took the life out of him, but this has turned into something else. They're using all these issues to get their foot in the door with their socialist intimidation, using violence, using personal threats. They say the cancel culture, it's worse than that. They, if you get canceled, you get canceled out of your show, or they cancel your opinion, or your website, your Twitter presence gets removed. But they destroy lives, and they're killing people. They're killing people. So this thing starts weeks ago, and it's still going on. It's still going on today, yesterday, last night. Rioting, blocking highways, attacking people, burning buildings. You know, they egg people into saying something as mundane as "all lives matter." And the mob gets on you fast after that once you do it. But you can see them. You see them do it. They'll walk around, they'll go, "Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter." They'll say it to people that aren't in their Marxist Islamist group that they know, and they'll walk around, they'll say "Black Lives Matter." So if you stop, if you just hear them and you just say "All Lives Matter," or "Native American Lives Matter," or "Jews Lives Matter," or "Asian Lives Matter," or "Dogs Lives," whatever you say, they were going to come, they're going to call you a racist, and they're going to beat you over the head, because that's what they do. And they get on you fast. There's videos everywhere of it. I'm sure you guys have seen it. And if you respond by protecting yourself, by fighting back, or you draw your weapon to try to end the assault, like they teach in CCA school, right? You want to end it. You don't want to shoot somebody. You want to deter. You want to end it. You want to be a deterrent. You pull out your weapon. So what happens? You fight back. You protect yourself. It's kind of like in hockey, right, where the guy that retaliates gets the penalty. It's incredible. But the city governments arrest you. And just the other day, Portland released 59 Antifa/only Black Lives Matter individuals that were involved in arson, in looting, in violent crime. They just released them. Portland, the Democrat bastion, right? One of them. Sanctuary City, left-wing socialist state. 59 people just released out of jail. No accountability for their actions. No accountability for their destruction and how many lives they hurt. But they'll arrest you. They'll arrest you. We know the couple that defended their house outside of St. Louis. And you know what happened? They're the ones that got into trouble. But, you know, it's as if OBLM, I call them only Black Lives Matter because they're really not about black lives either. They're really about Marxist and Islamist takeover. That's really what they're about. Their leadership is Marxist. A lot of their leadership is Muslim. And that's really what they want. Okay? But, you know, but OBLM and Antifa and their street allies, they seem to have the law on their side. Right? Without elections, without debate, and without facts. Now, the racial divide, which has existed probably as long as mankind has existed, has been used for thousands and thousands of years for certain people to gain power. You know, leaders or groups point out the one group for all the problems, right? You attach somebody to an issue, and then you name the target. And then you sick the people on them. It's hard to defend a negative. It's like somebody comes up to you and goes, "Hey, Bob, when are you going to stop beating your wife?" Bob may have never beat his wife, but all the people that hear it around him are going to have an impression. It's simple psychology. There's no magic here. There's no brainwashing chemicals coming down from the sky. People react. People react emotionally. Okay? And you unify all the haters by doing that. You name that target. The haters get unified, and they go on the assault. You know? It worked before. It's worked a lot of times. I'm a Jew. From the time I was a little kid in school, I took crap for being a Jew because this is what certain kids learn from home. The Jews are this, and Jews are that, and da-da-da. And I took crap all the time. I didn't burn down the school. I didn't have to kill anybody, you know, to feel. I just have to stand up. You just keep your head down, and you drive through your life, and you do what's right. You do what's right in your life. Both sets of my grandparents came here as immigrants. Both sets of my grandparents. I'm second generation. They came here for an opportunity to be free from violence, free from this kind of hate, this kind of Nazi-esque, National Socialist, Communist, Islamist hate. All they wanted was a chance to work, to earn money, to take care of their family. They didn't come here for SNAP benefits. They didn't come here for health care benefits. They didn't come here for free housing. They didn't come here to be part of a revolution. They came here to be part of the fabric of America, like a lot of other immigrants did. Italians and Irishmen, all these people that became Americans. And a lot of the African Americans that came here, descendants of slaves, not like Obama, you know, because he was not a descendant of slaves. He was a descendant of a white communist and a Kenyan socialist. But, you know, a lot of the families became part of America. They served in the army. They went to school. They got degrees. They got into business. They became doctors, store owners. Part of our society. And they stand up for America now. With all the threats from their own communities, their threat from their own neighbors. They stand up for it. But the progressive Democrat, socialist, Islamist hope it works again. Hopes this race divide, this race hate works again. I mean, just look at the rising anti-Semitism in the last few years. The number one hate crime in America the last 4 or 5 years has been attacks on Jews, the Jewish people, not attacks on LGBTQ, not attacks on Muslims. Like the Muslims would like you to believe that there's mobs of white guys running around threatening and chasing Muslims from town. Why isn't it there? You know why there's all these hoaxes, these race hoaxes? Because there's not enough actual crimes going on to make a point. You need something every day, every couple of days to put in the news, right? To keep it bubbling, to give it some value, even if it doesn't exist. Even if systemic racism doesn't even exist. If you get enough stories and enough, you know, guerrilla theater and enough crap on the TV, you can convince so many people that it's there, that it exists, that it is. And when it's not there, what do? They create it. Jesse Smollett. I mean, really. There was a guy that, I don't know why, this professor, he put all these hate notes, like sticky pad notes, all over his car and claimed that somebody left all these hate notes on his car, and the police verified that he wrote them himself. This was just on the internet just yesterday. I mean, it's insane. But they want it to work. We can't let it work. We do have to stand up for who we are and what we are. And this crap just has to end. You know, they put a whole line of bodies across I-5 in California yesterday. Girl just died from another guy trying to speed through. You know, we probably saw the block, roadblock. The cars that were all lined up to block the road, and he probably tried to shoot around it, and she was in the way. And here they are again. They're still out in the streets blocking the road. Why? You know, I mean, first of all, it doesn't do anything. It pisses off a lot of people. In fact, the people sitting in line in that car, there's more of them than there are of these guys. You know, maybe that's what it's going to take. But this stuff is sick already. Totally unnecessary. This small little minority of annoying and violent Marxist Islamists should not have the power they have over law-abiding, tax-paying citizens. Did we give it to them? You, me, did we do that? Did we decide we're going to give them this power over us and we're going to, you know, some people did, this, a minority did, maybe 20-30% of this extreme socialist believers, which is even frighteningly higher than it should be. When you look at the socialists and communists and national socialists and fascistic failures, you know, failures. You could say China is a big success, but they brutalize their people. They brutalize their people. It's disgusting what goes on in China, in the Chinese society. But how did they get this power? We didn't give it to them. But the progressive mayors and governors did. And the media did. The believers in socialism did. And we that said nothing and marched nowhere and didn't fight to protect our culture, we helped too. Because they didn't think there was going to be any pushback. Okay? So we helped too. That's got to change. This has to change. You know? And we're starting to see the pushback little by little. Little by little. Not just with people in the street, but in all different areas. And one of the areas it started was with a can of beans. That's right, folks. A can of beans. Because, you know, suddenly that became, you know, another opportunity to cancel out some business. But the Goya Foods CEO, he's got a lot of guts. He said he's not apologizing for praising President Trump. And CBS News reported that the head of Goya Foods, which sells Hispanic cuisine staples like garbanzo beans and adobo, and bills itself as the country's largest Hispanic-owned food company, is not waving any olive branches and confronting a backlash for extolling the virtues of President Donald Trump. Goya CEO Robert Unanu described Americans as truly blessed to have Mr. Trump's leadership in an appearance Thursday at the White House held to unveil Mr. Trump's Hispanic Prosperity Initiative. Not long after Boycott Goya, Goya Foods, and Goya Away began trending on social media platforms, Goya issued a statement later in the day that didn't mention any of the hostility. Instead, unrepentant Unani repeated his backing of Mr. Trump's Hispanic Prosperity Initiative, established by executive order at the event. He said, quote, "Our country faces a time of historic challenge, but we will meet that challenge together and continue to work towards greatness, focusing on a strong recovery and hold on to hope for a healthier future for all," Unanu said in the statement. Unanu was more blunt on Fox News Friday morning, telling the conservative leading network, "I'm not apologizing. The calls for the boycott of his company and products were an attempt of suppression of speech," he added. This guy's good. He goes, "I'm not apologizing for saying, and especially when you were called by the President of the United States, you're going to say, 'No, I'm sorry, I'm busy, no thank you.'" Unanu said, "I didn't say that to Obama's, and I didn't say that to President Trump." Nagoya Foods, a family-owned business for nearly 85 years, features 2,500 products, from seasoning, cooking oils, to beans and other Latin American staples, as well as frozen products and snacks. Goya offers a ubiquitous in grocery stores across the U.S., sometimes taking up their own entire aisle. You know, but many took to social media. You know, Fox Business reported that, you know, people went on social media to express their displeasure with Goya Foods CEO Robert Unanu after he praised President Trump at a White House. I mean, you want to trigger some progressive Democrat socialists? Oh my God, just say something positive. You know, just say something positive about Trump. And he said, quote, "My brother came up with a terrific idea. I am encouraging all to join me in purchasing $10 worth of Goya food products and donating them to your local food bank," self-described conservatarian radio host Mike Opelka wrote on Twitter. "Let's push a buyout, a boycott, not a boycott. Let's show the Goya way people what compassion can do." Opelka's post received 27,000 likes. And he said to go out today, buy your Goya foods. Fox News host Mark Levin wrote on Twitter, "Go out today and buy your Goya foods." I mean, most of the people fronting the Goya boycott either don't use Goya foods anyways, and most of the ones that ones who do will cave by Noche Buena, Senator Marco Rubio of Florida wrote on Twitter. But it seemed to have backfired. It sure did, because the Democrats in Hollywood won't buy Goya, but Americans are buying it in droves. In fact, I bought some Goya today while I was out shopping this morning. LifeZ reported that Goya Food CEO Unani said on Friday that he's not surrendering to the boycott, that we're truly blessed to have the same time to have a leader like President Trump, who is a builder, said Unani, who is also of Latin descent, at the White House event. "We were part of a commission called the White House Hispanic Prosperity Initiative, and they called on us to be there to see how we could help opportunities within the economic and educational realm for prosperity among Hispanics and among the United States." You know, the press, they never talk about the good things that Donald Trump does. I mean, he doesn't have to do this. He didn't have to do this executive order. Of course, the left will say he's just doing it for the election. You know, I think he's going to win big anyway, no matter what they do from here until November. You know, but, you know, they're going to try. They are going to try. And David Camioner wrote that liberal Hispanic hating politicians and airhead Hollywood celebrities are boycotting Goya, the largest Hispanic-owned food company in the country, because of the CEO's praise of the president. But the American public is doing the opposite, and from coast to coast, New York to California, Goya products are flying off the shelves as consumers who have not previously purchased Goya products are doing so now in support of the CEO and President Trump. On Saturday afternoon at a giant grocery store in Severna Park, Maryland, a quiet D.C. Suburban neighborhood, that is not exactly a hotbed of Latin culture or residents, Goya products were quickly disappearing. As shoppers prepared to make meals with such Hispanic staples as mojo, marinade, and classic Latin spices such as coriander and annatto, Goya has also been a leader in philanthropy, donating millions of pounds of products to food kitchens and homeless shelters around the nation. Now, at the event in question, Trump hosted Hispanic leaders at the White House on Thursday and signed an executive order on the White House Hispanic Prosperity Initiative to use more taxpayer support for private and charter schools and improve access by Hispanic Americans to education and economic opportunities. Boy, that sounds good to me. Does it sound good to you? Now, self-hating Hispanics, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, and failed former Democrat presidential candidate Julian Castro of Texas pathetically tried to curry favor with Anglo-Saxon liberals by bowing and scraping before the altar of political correctness. To no avail, as their cowardice and quisling behavior only cemented their image as craven sellouts of the culture practiced by people of their own heritage. Though one must admit, as both are of Puerto Rican and Mexican heritage respectively, a savory Cuban and or South American meal may be beyond their culinary ken. So, in alliance with the Uncle Tacos, a number of comically stupid celebrities took aim at Goya on the social media with hashtags like Boycott Goya, Goya Way. Many urged people who use Goya products to start buying foods produced by the company's competitors. I guess they meant Iberia. As reported earlier, Americans are doing exactly the opposite, which shows the respect most Americans have for the counsel of the Hollywood crowd. CEO Yunanyu called the pushback a suppression of speech, said that he was previously invited to the White House, and he never said no. And he ended by saying, so you're allowed to talk good or praise one president, but you're not allowed to aid in economic and educational prosperity? And you make a positive comment and all of a sudden it's not acceptable? Yuanyu said. He said he is not apologizing for his remarks supporting Trump economic policy and would not turn down other future invitations. Why would he? The Trump invitation and subsequent liberal boycott has made his company lots of money. And it was really drive them crazy. But, you know, it's not just him. You know, we're seeing the pushback. We're seeing the pushback on the street. We're seeing the pushback on the street. We're seeing it on the internet. We're seeing it in the media. But there was another gentleman, Maximo Alvarez. And this was reported by Christina Lalia, a Gateway. And Maximo Alvarez, the president of Sunshine Gasoline, praised President Trump and called out the radical left destroying the U.S. President Trump on Friday held a roundtable discussion about the political situation in Venezuela during his trip to Doral, Florida. Now, Maximo Alvarez, an immigrant from Cuba, recalled his family's journey to the United States in their quest for freedom from the hell of communism. Alvarez praised Trump. He gave up enjoying the fruit of his labors to do this. And Trump did give up a lot. What I read today, he lost, $7 billion the last couple of years. But anyway, Alvarez became emotional when he spoke about his love for the U.S. and called out the radical left destroying this country. He said, quote, "That's the America that these people are trying to destroy today by using phony terms like socialism. They're not. They're communists," Alvarez said. "Never forget that. I know our president understands that because he knows. He has been all over the world." Alvarez concluded by telling the BLM rioters not to be useful idiots. Please take the 10 minutes to watch this amazing video clip, and I want you to go on it. It's a must-watch video on Gateway Pundit. And, you know, people are waking up. People aren't asleep all of a sudden. People see what is going on. And I think this whole game, including the, you know, the new investigation, you know, he pardoned Roger Stone, which I think we all figured he would do. And he pardoned Roger Stone. And right away, Nancy Pelosi, "We're doing investigations." That drunk bitch. God, how did she become Speaker of the House? Seriously. I don't know. Maybe it's a Democrat thing. Maybe they just don't know how to maybe they didn't put enough time into English. So So when it comes to syntax and paragraph structure and trying to make a point, they just can't build sentences that make sense. You know, some people can talk off the top of their heads. So, but my namesake Clarice Feldman wrote an article called "Stay Angry, Not Dispirited," and that's how we need to be. You know, we need to be strong. These are really tough times. The media is inundates us with so much crap. The polling has been absurd. I mean, I don't know who the hell they're polling. You know, I'm sure if you took 50,000 Trump fans and you polled them, you get a completely different picture, right? But I don't know who they're polling, because I know that they use algorithms and I know they use mathematical equations to calculate and to figure. You know, they don't really go out and ask 20 million people questions like they should, because I guess they're trying to save money for themselves or whatever. But, you know, what they really need to do is they really need to go out and ask all these people, because these polls are insane. So we have to remain positive. Because, you know, I think Trump was looking like he was going to win in February, and I think it looks the same way now. I don't think there's been a big change. As a matter of fact, I think a lot of people, I think a lot of urbanites in cities have been pushed out of the Democrat Party or walked themselves out of the Democrat Party of all races and all cultures and all religions. And are going to be voting for Trump or not voting for Biden and not voting for the Democrats. I think the Democrats are in serious trouble, because I really believe the Democrats were in trouble in the 60s. You know, they escalated the Vietnam War. They had a split personality, segregate or not to segregate. That is the question. A lot of internal fighting. It took the Republicans to get the Voting Rights Act through. It took the Republicans to get the civil rights, equality laws through in the 60s, you know, but it's amazing. But stay angry, not dispirited. Like baboons showing their rears to zoo goers, the election of President Trump caused the rotting institutions of America to reveal their least attractive features. The press has engaged in nonstop lying without remorse. The premier educational institutions have revealed their Marxist colors and disdain for the sifting and winnowing of ideas that once were the reason to be. The FBI, Department of Justice, and the courts have tipped their partisanship, and to their dishonor, the ethical grounding that once made them worthy of respect. Not for the first time, Conrad Black has accurately summarized the, quote, nightmare campaign of outcry idiocy we've faced since Trump's election. It's nice to know that he believes I'm not the only one considering the country has gone mad. He says a very large number of us share that view, and he goes on to show us why. Now, among his targets are the lying press and the violent crime rate in New York City and Chicago, as the mayors of those cities reduce police budgets and attack law enforcement. The absurdity of never-Trumper Mitt Romney marching with Black Lives Matter, whose leader threatens to burn down the country if it doesn't get its way, black tags Joe Biden, a waxwork dummy hiding in his basement, who considers BLM, which has revealed itself as a white-hating Marxist urban terrorist organization, as a valuable political ally. The left's continued effort to prolong the economic shutdown of the country and the fatalities from the Wuhan virus have declined by nearly 90%. And increased testing shows large numbers of those who contracted it had none or minimal symptoms. A WAG online notes, "It's such a frightful malady most of us never knew we had until the test showed we did." He accurately describes the Democrat political campaign. Conrad Black, quote, "With less than 4 months before the election, this is the campaign. A constant media carpet bombing of defamatory lies about the president on behalf of a comatose candidate, propagation of unfounded hysteria over a fading pandemic, self-induced and redundant economic depression, open borders to admit and give free medical care to the unskilled peasantry of the world, and national self-abasement before militant African Americans, demanding minority rule, and the renunciation and degradation of those who founded the United States and led it to a pinnacle of influence in the world unequaled in history. And this ludicrous, most unimaginable mockery of a quest of the world's highest offices in the perversity of these times apparently leading in the polls. It's impossible, and it will blow up. Now, I know many of our readers, listeners are dispirited by all the insanity, and it does never seem to end. The conduct of people like the mayors of New York, Chicago, Minneapolis, Portland, Seattle add to our growing feeling of national chaos. For a lot of political organizations, the Constitution and its promise of anti-discrimination protections or property and liberty seem to have no meaning. To pick just one example of this lunacy, and there are certainly many to choose from, look at the city of Seattle. Now, last month, the city of Seattle's Office of Civil Rights sent an email inviting white city employees to attend a training session on interrupting, quote, listen to this, interrupting internalized racial superiority and whiteness, unquote, a program designed to help white workers examine their, quote, complicity in the system of white supremacy and, quote, interpret racism in ways that are accountable to black, indigenous, and people of color. Now, hoping to learn more, I submitted a public records request for all the documentation related to the training. The results are disturbing. At the beginning of the session, the trainers explained that while people have internalized a sense of racial superiority, which has made them unable to access their humanity and cause harm and violence to people of color, excuse me, the trainers claim that individualism, perfectionism, intellectualization, and objectivity are all vestiges of this internalized racial oppression and must be abandoned in favor of social justice principles. In conceptual terms, the city frames the discussion around the idea that black Americans are reducible to the essential quantity of black quality of blackness, and white Americans are reducible to the essential quality of whiteness, that is, the new metaphysics of good and evil. And it's just, you know, and it just has gone on. And but that's American Thinker. You should check out Clarice Feldman whenever you can. She's every Sunday she writes the top blog there on Sundays on the American Thinker website, and you should definitely check it out. But speaking of Seattle, I was so happy to hear this story. A judge has approved a petition to recall Democrat Mayor Jenny Durkin. You know, that moron that said it was going to be a summer of love? Well, Catherine Rodriguez of Breitbart noted that a King County, Washington Superior Court judge has approved a petition for a recall election for Democrat Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin. I know a lot of you are thinking, what about de Blasio? You know, what about that idiot up in Minneapolis? You know, there's a lot, you know, how about some governors like Gavin Newsom and Cuomo? Yeah, well, anyway, the Seattle Times reported that the Friday ruling over Durkin's recent handling of police brutality can proceed, allowing petitioners to start getting enough signatures to get the recall measure on the ballot. Now, KOMO reported that the plaintiffs behind the petition would have to collect 50,000 signatures before the election can be held. The Durkin petitioner's recall effort accuses Durkin of, quote, endangering the peace and safety of the community, unquote, by allowing the police to, quote, leak false information about fabricated crimes and threats to the media, and putting a citywide curfew in place without giving advance notice to the public. Now, the petitioners also accused the mayor of restricting certain property rights in the neighborhoods of Capitol Hill, where many, that's where I call it chump. Some people were calling it chop and some called it chaz. Well, I called it chump. You know, the certain property rights where the protests occurred in downtown Seattle. Now, a spokesperson for the mayor's office on Saturday rejected these claims, saying the mayor consistently has acted to protect the city's public health and safety and to respect the constitutional rights of peaceful protesters. That still makes me laugh. The petitioners filed 7 charges against Durkin, but of those charges, only one of them was applicable to support the recall election, and that was the use of tear gas and other chemical agents against rioting in the streets that erupted in Seattle during the protests and over George Floyd's death in May. Seattle police used pepper spray and flashbangs to stop the riots in Seattle, which have been going on for days in Floyd's death. The recall effort is called Fire the Mayor campaign. And we can only hope, because she does not deserve to be the mayor. And I'm sure you guys all saw de Blasio out there whipping a, I bet you as much work as de Blasio has done in a long time, painting Black Lives Matter in front of Trump Tower, right? Well, the Trump Tower mural, as reported by Lee Brown in the Post, has become a scene of heated clashes. And what this says to me, there's more and more people out there now standing up for America, standing up for what's right, standing up for justice, and against this insane Marxist Islamist revolution going on. Now, the giant new Black Lives Matter sign in front of Trump Tower has become a flashpoint for protesters clashing over the statement. On Saturday, just 2 days after Mayor Bill de Blasio was jeered as he helped paint the large yellow mural. See, even the people he thinks are supporting him are jeering him. There were further ugly confrontations as dozens of All Lives Matter counter-protesters descended on Fifth Avenue. As the group unveiled several flags, including thin blue line ones showing support for law enforcement, an opposing protester raced over and swiped the flagpole, almost started a brawl. You feel big and proud over that, someone asked the flagpole steward, who replied, yes. One woman screamed F you at Black Lives Matter protesters, giving double middle finger salutes, also making exaggerated coughing and sneezing gestures, seemingly to scare rivals during the coronavirus pandemic. And this is what the footage was showing. Now, wearing an All Lives Matter t-shirt and Make America Great Again red cap, the woman posed for pictures, kneeling and raising a fist, gestures normally used to represent the Black Lives Matter cause. A group also photobombed a man who appeared to be filming on his phone about the death of George Floyd, finally giving up and screaming F you as they filled the frame and gave rude gestures. The anti-BLM protesters included members of the Proud Boys, DailyMail.com said, referring to the all-male right-wing organization deemed a hate group by the U.S. Southern Poverty Law Center, which is a scam artist team. Just had to put that in there. Now, Missouri, you saw the McCloskeys, right? They tried to defend their house outside of St. Louis. Well, they actually sent a search warrant and they took the guy's AR-15 away. I guess maybe they sent Beto in. Beto O'Rourke, whatever his name is. But now the Attorney General of Missouri is slamming the prosecutor for politically motivated decisions. So these things give me hope. The fight has just begun, ladies and gentlemen. Here in the middle of July, the fight has just begun. And Emma Colton wrote for Washington Examiner, the Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt said the prosecutor in the case of Mark and Patricia McCloskey has a record of making politically motivated decisions not based on the law. Well, if he knew that already, why is she in the position? That's what you're asking me? Yes. Why is she in that position? Now, the McCloskeys made headlines earlier this summer for brandishing their guns at the Black Lives Matter protesters who marched through their gated community and actually on their lawn. Now, on Friday, St. Louis police seized the rifle seen in the viral videos of the couple after officers executed a search warrant at their home. An attorney for the couple said he hopes to meet with the St. Louis Circuit. So hopefully, some of this stuff will get turned around. But then there's a story that the mainstream media hasn't been covering at all. A young white mother was killed by Black Lives Matter mob for allegedly saying all lives matter. 24-year-old mother was killed by Black Lives Matter mob in Indianapolis last week, allegedly for saying all lives matter. Now, unlike Charlottesville or any violence from the right, this killing was reported so quietly that barely anyone noticed. Well, Jessica Dottie Whitaker was shot and killed following an altercation with Black Lives Matter thugs who were upset that she and her fiancé had said all lives matter last Sunday. See, what they do, ladies and gentlemen, is they come up in your face and they go, Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. So if you say all lives matter, or my lives matter, or we lives matter, or whatever, your cat's lives matter. They sick you. They get on you. According to the victim's family, the shooting started with an argument over the Black Lives Matter and language. Eventually, the two sides separated, walked away from each other until witnesses claim the killer opened fire from a nearby bridge, shot her right in the head, and ran away. But these stories, you just don't hear these stories. And then there was this crazy video that the New York Post had posted. Joe Marino and Dina Balsamini posted that two men were stabbed in a subway car by this wild, crazy person. You know, and it's, you know, it was on the 7 train, and the suspect, Patrick Chambers, 46, shouted at the two elderly gentlemen sitting across from him, "Why aren't you home with your kids?" Chambers then pulled out a blade, allegedly slashing and stabbing the men, who were both in their 70s. The mayhem erupted at 7:25 a.m. on July 5th. You know, nobody heard of that. But, you know, people are going to say, oh, this violence is all coincidental. Well, there was a man who allegedly ran over a Marine veteran and former police officer for being white. And this was reported on American Wire by Jake Dimla. Now, a Wisconsin man was allegedly targeting a white person, used a pickup truck, or purposely ram and kill a motorcyclist, deputies said in a Thursday press conference. Daniel Navarro was suspected of using his father's 2004 Dodge pickup to swerve into oncoming traffic and kill a motorcyclist on July 3rd. The victim was later identified as 55-year-old Philip Thyssen, a Marine veteran and retired law enforcement officer. Navarro told officials that he intentionally struck Thyssen head-on because he was white, Fond du Lac deputies said in the press conference. Now, Thyssen spent his law enforcement career fighting crimes against children and was known to volunteer at the local food pantry, Fox said. The former public servant died in the street after his bike went airborne and rescue personnel weren't able to resuscitate him. And then there was this one that really disgusts me, and you can go into Felon World Group and see it, but these two slime bags beat this 80-year-old man. He looks like he's going to die. The 80-year-old man. Lancaster, California. This was reported on Fox 32 in Chicago. But in Lancaster, California, authorities... authorities Friday released the names of a suspect and possible accomplice in the alleged assault of an 80-year-old man in the bathroom of a Lancaster grocery store. They were seeking help from the public to find them. I'm sure none of these were hate crimes. The pair was identified as Damaris Wade, 22, and Tamika White, 33. They were last seen in a 2007 Dodge Altima with California license plate 8CCC010. So call the Lancaster police if you see it. Now, the assault occurred about 8:30 a.m. in the grocery store at the 1000 block of East Avenue J near 10th Street. The victim was assaulted and robbed, and they beat this guy almost to death. And I know they're going to say, oh, it's just, you know, this would be happening anyway if they weren't defunding the police, if there hadn't been Black Lives Matter looting, burning, beatings going on all over, Antifa helping out, Islamists helping out, that it would be going on. But these people are being emboldened, you know, and we need to not be defunding our police departments. And then there were two Texas police officers that were basically assassinated. They were just assassinated. Two police officers were shot and killed in the line of duty near Mexico border in Texas. Officers Edelmaro Garza, 45, and Ishmael Chavez, 39, of the McAllen Police Department in southern Texas, died Saturday after they responded to a domestic disturbance call at a home and subsequently came under fire. How many times have we heard that? Where two officers... They get called in on domestic violence. They show up and the guy's shooting. Now, the suspect, Alden Camarillo, 23, died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound at the scene. He had a string of arrests before firing at the officers, including driving under the influence, assault, marijuana possession. Police are still investigating the circumstances of the shooting, and dash cam footage reportedly didn't capture the shooting. But apparently, they had no chance. These guys had no chance to be able to react. Or even figure out that they were going to get gunned down. But CNS reported that 48 police officers slain in 2019 and that 511 over the last decade. That's nearly one per week over a 10-year period. I mean, think about that. 48 police officers were feloniously killed in 2019, according to FBI data, which means And that's a lot more than black people were killed by policemen in 2019, more than white people being killed by policemen. I mean, it's ridiculous. 48 died last year in felonious incidents. Now, in 2019, the total of 89 police officers died, where 48 were felonious and 41 were accidental. Over the last 10 years, from 2010 to 2019, there were 1,114 police officer deaths. 511 were felonious and 503 were accidental. Almost every suspect in connection with a felonious police death had a criminal history. How's that for irony? The irony, what a joke, right? The joke's on us, folks. The FBI identified 49 responsible assailants in connection to the 48 felonious deaths in 2019. And among those assailants, 36 had previously been arrested and 12 were under judicial supervision. The assailants or offenders used firearms in 44 of the 48 deaths and vehicles in the remaining 4 deaths. Most of the weapons were handguns, but 7 officers were killed with rifles and 1 with a shotgun. Of the 48 felonious officer deaths in 2019, 45 were male and 3 were female. Of the assailants, 48 were male and 1 was a female. These deaths occurred in 19 states and in Puerto Rico. The average age of the officers feloniously killed, 40 years old. You know, and this stuff just keeps going on. It just keeps going on. And as this is happening, Jim Hoff is reporting that Americans are fleeing the urban centers following the coronavirus and then the only Black Lives Matter, Antifa, and Islamist protests and riots. Now, the CEO of Realogy Holdings, which owns Century 21, Coldwell Banker, and Southeast International, admitted this week that their companies are already seeing homebuyers flee the dense urban centers for the suburbs. Now, Ryan Schneider, the CEO of Realogy Holdings, says the migration is due to coronavirus, but certainly the far-left mayors in America's most populous cities and the Black Lives Matter protests and riots are contributing to the exodus. You know, and I'm sure it is. But of course they're going to leave. But you know what? You know what a goof that all is? They're going to go to the suburbs? Well, Joe Biden wants to take the suburbs away from you to go to. Like, some people want to take America away so no one has anywhere to go. And Joe Biden wants to take your suburban communities away. And Breitbart reported, Warner Todd Houston reported, that Biden's 2020 party platform proposal seeks to abolish America's suburban communities. Joe Biden's radical proposal for the Democrat Party platform seeks to put an end to America's suburban communities by forcing low-income housing into every neighborhood and flooding every community with immigrants, illegal or otherwise. The proposal, known as the Biden-Sanders Unity the Biden-Sanders Unity Task Force recommendations would provide, I guess they're not going to go into Biden's neighborhood though, right? Anyway, would provide instant amnesty and a pathway to U.S. citizenship for the 22 million, now it's up to 22 million, at least they're admitting it. They were always saying, oh, there's 11 million, yeah. 22 million illegal aliens now living in the nation. Astoundingly, it would also give legal status to all the world's refugees, regardless of the legitimacy of their claim to the status. But on top of that, Biden and Sanders are proposing that Barack Obama's so-called affirmative furthering fair housing rules will be put into full force. For instance, in the executive order section of the platform proposal, Biden-Sanders note that Biden would implement, quote, implement the Obama-Biden administration's affirmatively furthering fair housing rule, requiring communities receiving certain federal funding to proactively examine housing patterns and identify and address policies that have discriminatory effects. The Biden-Sanders platform also scolds Trump and says Biden would roll back Trump administration policies gutting fair lending and fair housing protections. In another section, the platform states Biden would ensure effective and rigorous enforcement of the Fair Housing Act and the Home Mortgage Disclosure Act, hold financial institutions accountable for discriminatory practices in the housing market. And that's what happened in that bubble in 1999. They were giving away all those, you know, the no-doc loans. You did not have to show, you didn't have to prove your income before they gave you a loan for a house, and then the whole thing collapsed. What a surprise, right? You know, you give a loan to somebody, that can't pay the mortgage, what do you think is going to happen? They're going to be in a very terrible situation. But you know, all of the trying to do this, you know, the Democrats they have unleashed a monster. They have unleashed a Marxist, Islamist monster in our country. They've allowed them to deface and destroy monuments to our history and our heritage. They have allowed them to burn businesses and put businesses out permanently. There are businesses that are never coming back. I saw Brooks Brothers file bankruptcy. I mean, some real mainstays, okay, have been destroyed by the combination of the pandemic shutdown and then the rioting and burning. It was like a setup. It's like they emptied out the city and then they sent in the terrorists, the Democrats. But the Democrats can't control this. In fact, eventually they'll come after the Democrats, and won't they be shocked and surprised when, you know, it was like that guy in the store. I don't know if you guys remember seeing that video about a month ago. And they're smashing up this guy's store, and he's standing there in front of the window going, "But I'm on your side. But I'm, you know, I mean, it's sad. It's sad. I don't know why these people think that anyone's going to be on their side. Because their goal is domination. Their goal is total domination. Total domination. And as this coronavirus rolls on, more and more information keeps leaking out. And, you know, apparently, a guy did some research, so does also on Gateway, but this guy named Kyle Lamb put together a chart showing the number of deaths reported by coronavirus tracking project linked to the Chinese coronavirus. The result of his work showed that the CTP is adding deaths each week from prior periods that make the current period death tolls appear greater than they really are. And some of these additions are very suspect. And one thing that I've noticed, you know, also is that when somebody tests positive for COVID, it doesn't mean they have the disease and they're going to die from it or they're at threat. But they're counting them all together. And the whole idea that ICUs are filled up is nonsense, because as our favorite Dr. Samadi has said, and a lot of other doctors have said, that that's like standard to have the ICU filled up because that's your biggest billing area. Now, the number of deaths reported publicly come from the COVID tracking project. Now, Kyle Lamb created a chart using data from the CDC that shows the number of COVID-19 deaths reported by the CDC and the weeks of death occurred. In the chart, he shows the total number of deaths from COVID-19 reported by the CD, and these totals change as each week passes and new deaths being reported per week. Its typical mortality table, you should see a few deaths being reported in week one and many more in the following weeks, but then the number of deaths reported that occurred during a specific week decrease as time goes by. After a few weeks, this lag in reporting diminishes, and eventually all deaths are reported. This is typically in the insurance industry, where the industry accounts for, always the insurance industry, right? Accounts for deaths being reported on a consistent rate over time, with very few claims reported after a few months from the date of the event, or the date someone died. This may be morbid to those not in the insurance industry, but that's how it's done. Rarely are there jumps in reporting in prior periods unless something odd is going on, like fraud. And, you know, there was another individual that looked at the data that Kyle put together. And he even showed that the deaths have been decreasing since April, no matter what the mainstream media says. And so, you know, we're faced with the mainstream media that's lying. They're certainly not the fourth estate that they used to be. Anyway, there was an explosion in San Diego port on one of the boats. You know, whenever I hear about stuff like that, I always wonder if it was an accident or what it was. And the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad took rocket fire recently. And, you know, the war is on. The war is on this world. But we have to keep the faith. And we have to make sure that we stay positive and we stay on the right side. And, you know, I think Trump's still going to win. So as hard as it is some of these days, remain positive. Think positive. Get ready to vote. We got to vote as a huge block in November. We have to. We have to. You've been listening to Feldman World Review. I'm Brian Irving, your host here. Thank you for tuning in. And remember, when the going gets tough, the tough keep the faith.
That's your world. I just live in it.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Hey, I want to thank you for listening to the July 12th podcast of Feldman World Review. This is Brian Irving, your host here at Feldman World Review, thanking you for tuning in and supporting the show all these years. Really appreciate it. And just remember, man, just get in there, get ready to vote. Every single person that can vote has to come out and vote. Even if they've convinced you that your county's going to lose, your city's going to lose the election, go vote. Go vote. Go vote. And remember, when the going gets tough, the tough keep the faith.